Marduk is pleased, Ishtar announced, looking up from the bowl. The sacrifice that you made to him in the furnace was most acceptable to him. Trok nodded.
Tell my brother Marduk that I'm pleased he is pleased.
Trok knelt on a pile of leopard skins spread on the stone floor in the inner sanctum of the temple before the altar of Marduk the Devourer. The golden image of the god was of a comely youth and a smiling countenance. The statue was 3 or 4 times life-sized. The only characteristics that distinguished the god from a mortal, other than his size, were tiny goat-like horns on each side of his curly head and cloven hoofs instead of feet.
You tell me that Marduk was a terrible god, crueler and fiercer than any other in the pantheon, more ferocious even than Sueth.
Trok had challenged Ishtar when he first had seen the image.
Yet this is a pretty boy.
Divine Pharaoh, be not deceived, Ishtar had warned him. This is the face that Marduk shows the world of men. His true aspect is so hideous that any man who looks upon it is rendered instantly blind and slobbering, twitching mad.
Sobered by that thought, Trok had knelt before the image and remained silent while the priests had brought in 2 newborn infants and offered them to the god. Ishtar had slit their throats so skilfully that they made hardly a cry as they bled into the golden divination bowl that he held beneath them. When the small, exsanguinated bodies were dropped into the marble chute that led to the furnace below the sanctum, Ishtar had placed the golden bowl before the altar and lit the incense braziers. Chanting and mumbling, he threw handfuls of herbs on the flames until the vault filled with wreaths of blue smoke and the air became fragrant and enervating. After a while, Trok found it difficult to think clearly, and his vision became distorted so that the shadows seemed to waver and dance, and he heard the sounds of distant, mocking laughter. He closed his eyes and pressed his fingers to the lids. When he opened them again, he saw that the sweet smile on the face of the god had become a leer so obscene and frightening that his skin crawled as though poisonous insects were creeping upon it. He tried to look away, but found he could not.
The great god Marduk is pleased, Ishtar repeated, reading the auguries reflected in the surface of the blood-filled bowl. He deigns to answer your questions.
Tell Marduk that I honour him as my peer. I shall send 1,000 more sacrifices into his furnace.
Marduk hears you.
Ishtar picked up the bowl and peered into it. After a long silence, he began to rock gently back and forth with the bowl in his lap. He looked up at last.
Behold, Marduk, the great god of Babylon! Speak to us, dreadful one, we entreat you!
He opened his arms to the golden statue, and the god spoke in the voice of a child, lisping and mellifluous.
I greet you, my brother Trok, said this strange voice. You wish to know about the fledgling falcon that spreads its wings and sharpens its talons in the desert places.
Trok was startled not only by the disembodied voice, but also by the accuracy of this statement. Indeed, he'd intended asking for counsel on his plans to attack and destroy Nefertiti. He tried to reply, but his throat was closed and as dry as the wrappings of an ancient mummy. The sweet childlike voice went on.
You have had good counsel from my loyal servant Ishtar the Mede. It was as well that you hearkened to him. If you had not done so, if you had marched on Galala when you proposed to do so, you would have encountered a disaster even greater than the Khamsin winds that destroyed and buried your legions.
Trok recalled bitterly how Ishtar had dissuaded him from leading another army into the eastern desert to attack Nefaseti and to capture Mintaka, his runaway woman. Long ago his spies had reported to him the exact whereabouts of the pair at Galala. He'd assembled another force of chariots and foot soldiers for the expedition. He knew that if he did not rid himself of this challenge to his throne, if he did not crush the boy Pharaoh before he attained his full strength, then soon the rebellions and insurrections would spread through his entire realm. Once that happened, he knew that the dynasty he was founding would end in destruction and extinction. As much as he longed to rid himself of the challenge and the threat of Nefaseti, he longed much more to recapture the only woman who had ever humiliated and defied him. His hatred for her surpassed any other of his emotions. Ishtar had prevented him marching. With predictions of dire consequences, with warnings of disaster and death, Ishtar had persuaded him to divert his forces into this joint expedition with Nadja to the fabled city of Babylon. Although thus far the expedition had turned out to be a triumph, although the booty and the slaughter had been beyond counting, still Trok felt himself unfulfilled. He spoke as much to himself as to the golden god when he growled, "I must have Nefaseti. The double crown will sit uneasily on my head until I kill him and throw his body on the flames so that he'll never know resurrection. Already I've expunged his name and the name of his sire from every edifice and monument in Egypt. But I must destroy him and his memory forever." In his anger and hatred, he sprang to his feet and shouted at Ishtar and his god, "You have cheated me of my destiny once before with your ill omens and baleful warnings. Now I address you as your peer, your equal, and not as a worshipper. I demand that you deliver the person and the soul of Nefaseti to me in justice and retribution. I will not accept another refusal from you and your minion here." In his fury and frustration, Trok aimed a kick at Ishtar. The Mede saw it coming and rolled aside. Trok's bronze-cleated sandal caught the divining bowl, and the blood of the babe splattered across the flags and down the front of the altar. Even Trok was appalled at what he'd done. He stood frozen before the image, waiting for the reaction of the god.
"Sacrilege!"
Ishtar wailed.
"Trok, Uruk! Now your enterprise is surely doomed!"
Then he prostrated himself in the puddle of blood, so terror-stricken that he could not raise his eyes to the image. A dreadful hush had fallen over the sanctum. The faint rumble of the flames of the sacrificial furnace under the stone floor on which they stood seemed to enhance it. Then there was a sound, soft but unmistakable. It was the sound of breathing, like that of a sleeping child to begin with, but then growing harsher and stronger. Now it was the breathing of a wild beast, then of some monster that echoed through the temple. At last, it became the furious sound of an outraged god roaring like all the storms of the heavens, thundering like the gale-swept waves of the ocean. So terrible was it that even Ishtar the Mede whimpered like a child.
"The god will never allow you to succeed now. You dare not march against Taita and his protege. Not until the warlock is dead,"
Ishtar whispered. Then a terrible voice spoke, so harsh and unearthly that it raked Trok's nerves and made him shudder.
"Hear me, Trok Uruk, you mortal man who claims to be part of the Godhead."
The thunder echoed and rolled round the dark recess of the sanctum.
"You know that you are no god. Hear me, blasphemer. If you march against Galala in defiance of me and my prophet Ishtar the Mede,
I shall destroy you and your army, just as I buried your other army in the sands of the desert. This time you shall not escape my wrath.
Even though he was befuddled by the poisonous smoke of the incense braziers, and fearful of the rage of Marduk that filled the temple, Trog was still cunning enough to sense some false note in Ishtar's protestations, something not convincing in the force of Marduk's fury. He gathered his courage, which had been scattered by the supernatural manifestations of the gods, and tried to identify exactly what had given him pause. He realized that the sound of the bestial breathing and the thunderous voice issued from the belly of the golden statue. He stared at it hard, and saw that the navel of the god was a dark slit. He took a step towards the statue, and Ishtar raised his head in alarm and cried, "Beware, Pharaoh! God is angry! Do not approach him!" Trok ignored him and took another step forward, staring at the god's belly button. He saw a faint gleam in the depths of the aperture, a shadowy movement. Often in battle he'd sensed the exact moment when the fates had swung in his favour, and he felt it now. He steeled himself and shouted above the awful sound of the god's breathing,
"I defy you, Marduk the Devourer! Strike me down if you are able! Heap your temple fires upon me if you can!"
Suspicion became certainty, as the glimmer showed again in the slit in the god's belly and the breathing faltered. Trok drew his sword, and with the flat of the blade knocked Ishtar out of his way. Then he ran forward, darting behind the golden image. Quickly he examined the back, tapping the metal with the tip of his blade. It sounded hollow as a drum, and when he looked more closely he discovered a removable panel that fitted almost perfectly.
"A trapdoor," he growled. "It seems that there's more in Marduk's belly than ever went in through his mouth."
He ducked back and peered into the slit in the god's belly. A human eye looked back at him. The pupil widened with astonishment, and Trok gave a mighty shout,
"Come out of there, you slime of the great beast!"
He placed his shoulder against the idol and heaved with all his strength. The statue wobbled on its stone base, and Trok heaved again. Slowly the image went down with a crash onto the stone flags. Ishtar screamed and leapt out of the way as it threatened to crush him. The head of the god was bent at an angle by the fall, and in the silence after the shattering impact there was a scrabbling sound like startled rats from the interior of the fallen idol. The trapdoor flew open and a small figure crawled out. Trok seized it by its thick head of curls.
"Mercy, great King Trok," the girl pleaded in that honey-sweet voice. "It was not I who tried to deceive you. I was doing the bidding of others."
She was such a lovely child that for a moment Trok felt his rage subside. Then he snatched her up by the ankles and dangled her upside down in one fist. She was weeping and writhing in his grip.
"Who ordered you to do this?"
Trok demanded.
"Ishtar the Mede,"
she wept. Trok swung her twice in a circle round his head, building up speed and momentum, then dashed the child against the temple column. Her screams were cut off instantly. Trok let her corpse drop in a crumpled heap on the altar. He turned back to the golden idol and thrust his sword into the opening of the trapdoor, rummaging round in the belly of the god. There was another squeal, and a grotesque creature shot out of the opening. At first Trok thought it was a huge bullfrog and jumped back in alarm. Then he saw it was a hunchback dwarf, even shorter and smaller than the girl he'd just killed. The dwarf bellowed with a voice like a bull, the deafening roars out of keeping with his diminutive stature. He was the ugliest man Trok had ever set eyes on, his eyes out of kilter and of disparate sizes, clumps of black hair bushed out of his ears and nostrils, and from the huge moles that hung from his face.
"Forgive me that I tried to deceive you, mighty god and king of Egypt!"
Trok slashed at him with the sword, But the creature ducked and dodged and leapt nimbly about the sanctum, roaring with terror in that outlandish voice. Trock found himself laughing at his antics. The dwarf shot behind the curtains at the back of the chamber and disappeared through a secret doorway. Trock let him go and turned back to Ishtar, just in time to seize a handful of his stiff lacquered hair as he tried to flee from the chamber. He flung him full length on the stone floor and kicked him in the ribs, belly and back. "You have lied to me!" Trock was no longer laughing, and his face turned dark purple with rage. "You have deliberately misled me. You have diverted me from my purpose."
"Please, master,"
Ishtar wailed, rolling across the floor to avoid the savage kicks.
"It was for your good alone."
"Was it for my good that you allowed the spawn of Tamosa to flourish in Galala unchecked, and to spread rebellion and sedition throughout my realm?"
Trock bellowed.
"Do you think I am mad and so stupid that I should believe that?"
"It is true,"
Ishtar blubbered as Trock's toe caught him in the ribs and knocked him over on his back.
"How could we go against the warlock who commands the storm to his will as though it were a pet dog?"
"You are afraid."
Trock stood back to regain his breath.
"The warlock?"
he demanded incredulously.
"He overlooks us. He can turn my own spells back upon me. I cannot prevail against him. I sought only to save you from him, great Pharaoh."
"You sought only to save your own blue-tattooed skin,"
Trock snarled, and rushed in again to slam kicks into Ishtar's doubled-up body.
"I beg of you, first of all the gods,"
Ishtar covered his head with both arms,
"give me my reward and let me go. Taita has dissipated my powers. I cannot confront him again. I can be of no further use to you."
Trock stood with one foot drawn back, frozen in the act of delivering another kick.
"Your reward?"
he demanded in astonishment.
"Surely you do not believe that I will reward your disloyalty with 3 lakhs of gold?"
Ishtar came up on his knees and tried to kiss Trock's foot.
"I have given you Babylon, great master. You cannot deny me what was promised."
Trock laughed angrily.
"I can deny you anything I please to, even life itself. If you wish to live another day, then you'll lead me to Galala and take your chances in a trial of magical strength with the warlock."